Hey, thank you, Kane. 806 FM Talk, 106.5 and Mobile Mornings on this Wednesday. As we mentioned last hour, we're checking in with AL1's Congressman, candidate for Senate Bradley Byrne, live from Washington as we get the latest from Washington on what happened last night. I guess early in the morning, Iraq-Iran time, late in the evening, our time, with Iran launching missiles into Iraq at bases that housed U.S. troops. We're joined now by Congressman Byrne. Thanks for your time.
Yes, Sean, good to be with you.
Hey, good
night.
Yeah, good to have you on. So let's talk about that and, you know, what you were hearing in Washington as this went down yesterday, half a world away.
Well, obviously, nobody on our side, at least, knew it was coming until maybe shortly before it happened. We had some heads up, our forces did, and they were able to shelter, it sounds like. We knew something was going to happen, we just didn't know what. Look, this was a direct missile barrage from Iran itself, not from these Iran-supported militias, but from Iran itself. And they attacked two Iraqi bases, not U.S. bases. Now, there were U.S. personnel there, but there were two Iraqi bases that were attacked. And they have enough precision with their ballistic missiles to where if they wanted to hit Iraqi forces or if they wanted to hit American forces, they certainly had the capability of doing it. So far, and there's been over 10 hours of sunlight there in Iraq so far, we have no reports on either the Iraqi side or the American side of any casualties. So if this is their retaliatory action, or they make sure I underscore that, it doesn't look like it's much more than a face-saving gesture.
And that's interesting to hear from you, because I was saying that last night on Twitter. That's what it seemed like to me, that if we're looking at this tit for tat, as it's been cliched, this interaction with Iran, that because we can go back, we'll go back to what's happened here recently, especially under the watch of President Trump, but they could have, I mean, the idea that they're incompetent and couldn't hit what they were aiming at with the missiles. I find that hard to believe. It seems like they knew better than to actually have American casualties.
Yeah, remember last September that they were able, with their precision weapons, to take out half Saudi Arabian oil production in a matter of minutes. And I was briefed on that. I know exactly what they did there, and it is remarkable what they were able to do. So they have the capacity to strike at us. And here's the problem. They do not have the capacity to defend against our counterstrike if they hit directly at one of our military targets. I mean, we will make them pay a very, very steep price, and they know that. And they also know now, because taking out Soleimani is a huge deal, they know our resolve. I mean, we took out the most dangerous man in the Middle East, the most powerful man underneath the supreme leader in Iran. And it's a big deal across that whole region. And for their retaliatory strike is to lob a few missiles into some Iraqi air bases that don't really have any human casualties, any injuries. That's not much of a tit for tat. That's just a face-saving gesture.
And that's one thing I think we should think about as Americans, is realize sometimes they're doing things, I'm sure, to either placate or frighten or, I don't know, galvanize their power inside Iran, right? I mean, they do something like that. That is more for the home audience.
Correct. I mean, there have been lots of domestic uprisings in Iran over the last several months. They've got a huge economic problem. You saw on television the crowds that came out for the various functions for the Soleimani funeral over the last several days. So this is something where if they did nothing, it would have caused them more domestic problems, which they can't stand any more of. So they had to do something, but they knew they couldn't directly challenge us, and if they did, that we would hit them with maximum effect, and that would be even worse for them.
Mm-hmm.
So much like you see with a lot of other these dictatorial regimes around the world, it's all about preserving the regime. And hitting us in a major way would have damaged their regime badly, perhaps upended it. And I don't think they were willing to risk that. They had to do something. This is what they did.
Yeah, it was definitely, I believe, calculated on the part of the Iranians, and the fact that it wasn't, you know, one of their surrogates. It wasn't a proxy attacking. They probably needed to make those missiles actually launch from Iran to placate the home crowd.
that and Sean, for a long time, they and the rest of the world have been under this little charade that when one of these Iranian-backed militias does something, it's not really Iran. Well, we have pulled back the cover from that. No more. When one of these militias does something, everybody's going to put their finger directly on Iran, and Iran's going to be retaliated against. So not only have we taken Soleimani out, but we have shifted that narrative completely. So this has changed the calculus in the Middle East, for the better from our point of view. But I'm going to say this loud and clear. The United States does not need to be in war with Iran. That is not in our interest. So we need to make sure we make some wise decisions about how we play this pretty strong hand that we've now created for ourselves.
Yeah, I want to move forward in your thinking on that, but circle back for a second. And one thing that I've been disgusted by many in the mainstream media that seem to celebrate or canonize Soleimani. This is a guy, this is not just some rank-and-file Iranian soldier. I mean, this is a person that's over the political wing, if you would, of their military. We really don't have that here, but a political wing of their military, and somebody who is part and parcel in the deaths of Americans on the battlefield.
Yeah, he's responsible for far more American deaths and deaths of people throughout the Middle East in general than Osama bin Laden was.
Wow,
he was
that's
more dangerous than Osama bin Laden. And just think about that for a second. More dangerous than Baghdadi. We just made a major move forward for the cause of peace and stability in the Middle East. Now, you know, that part of the world will blow every opportunity for peace and stability you give them.
Yeah.
But we've just given them an opportunity for peace and stability. Let's see if they're smart enough to take it.
Yeah, I'm wondering then going forward about our response, because I think back to this, and it's you know, people will look at even recent history. We don't have to do a deep dive how President Trump has reacted. For example, the Iranians shoot down a drone, and there were many saber rattlers out there that wanted some major strike back against the Iranians, and President Trump was measured in that. They struck the Saudi oil fields through their proxies, and we were measured in that. So there has been a measure here from President Trump where he is looking not to escalate.
Exactly. He's verbally said that, but his actions have shown that as well. And I think he's been right to do that. But you can't let them attack our forces in Iraq the way they did. You can't let them, and this was Iran that did it, you know, attack our embassy, which is attacking the United States, and we just don't do anything. And we let this guy Soleimani just traipse around the Middle East scot-free. Well, there's a new sheriff in town, and we showed him this new sheriff in town. We took him out. And now the question is not what we're going to do. What are they going to do? And I think that answer is going to come in the next several weeks. Now, I do think, Sean, you and I've talked about this before. I do think that we need an overall strategy for the Middle East that we really don't have right now. What's our end game here? And how do we achieve that end game? You know, the president has verbally said many times, let's just get out. A lot of people in the military have said that's pretty dangerous to do. Well, all right, what are we going to do? Let's make up our minds. I share the president's skepticism, by the way. I really do share his skepticism about our ability to achieve much over there. But I also hear the military saying, hey, we've got to make sure that we have enough elements there to counteract any terrorist incidents. So we may have to have some counterterrorist forces remain in the Middle East, but let's be very clear-eyed. We're not going to build healthy governing democracies in Iraq or Syria or Afghanistan. That's not going to happen.
Yeah, that's been proven for sure. And so, but an exit strategy, would you call it that? Would it be how you dial down troops? Right now, we have increase in troops, obviously, with what's going on in the 82nd Airborne there. But would this be something that would have some kind of timetable for a troop reduction in the region? And does that, by the way, give Iran a win because they're calling for the removal of U.S. troops from Iraq?
No, I think it's a shift in our mission from, as I say, true nation-building efforts to a reduction of our forces there to where it's purely counterterrorism. Now, counterterrorism is more than just whack-a-mole, by the way. There's a lot more to it than that. But counterterrorism efforts just make sure that we don't allow Iraq to become a safe haven for terrorist groups like ISIS, that Afghanistan doesn't become a safe haven group for al-Qaeda, that Syria doesn't become a safe haven for Iranian proxies or for are the bad people. So I can see the counterterrorism effort remaining in that region with our troops on the ground, but it's a much narrower agenda, one that's where we're not trying to fool ourselves about trying to create some sort of a healthy, functioning democracy in countries that clearly don't want that.
Now, I wonder if we bring other of our allies in there and partners in the region, to them to breach the Iraqi border. I don't know how that, because I'm thinking about the Saudis, I'm thinking about the Jordanians, how they may be able to step in and assist as we kind of let go, they can take a grip.
Well, I'm a little bit skeptical of that, frankly. I mean, that attack on the Saudi Arabian oil fields was an attack on Saudi Arabia. What did they do? Not much.
Nope.
So if they're not willing to defend themselves, I don't know that we can expect them to do much in other countries like Syria or Iraq. But I do think if we go in there and tell them, look, we're going to stop this, you know, ridiculous idea that we're going to do nation building over there. We're going to stand there for counterterrorism purposes. But if you want to remake the Middle East so that there is clearly something that's opposed to Iran that will work, then you've got to take all of your wealth and all of your people and put them directly into that so that Muslims are involved in it and not Americans.
Do you have a second? Can you hold on? Because we've got a news break, but I want to ask you about what's going on in the House right now.
Okay, sure.
All right, coming right back. AL1's Congressman, candidate for Senate, Bradley Byrne, joining us from Washington. Of course, talking about the conflict now between the United States and Iran, which you could argue has been going on for 40 years. But what about what's happening in the House and the articles of impeachment? What's that process looking like right now? What's the timeline for the Senate getting this and going forward? We'll talk to Congressman Byrne about that when we return. Y'all stay close. It's FM Talk 106.5. All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5. Continuing our conversation with AL1's Congressman Bradley Byrne, candidate for Senate, and getting some updates here on the conflict from last night. That actually, I guess, Congressman Byrne, we could say that this conflict between the United States and Iran has been going on since I was a wee lad. I mean, this is goes back to the fall of the Shah.
Yeah, Iran considered themselves to be in a state of war with America ever since. Now, the word war has very serious connotations under our Constitution, so I'm not going to concede to them that from our point of view that we're in a state of war with them. But certainly we're in a very heightened area of hostilities. And, you know, we made a major shift last week, and I think it was a shift for the better.
Yeah, it's one that I think if we had become predictable in the region and people already knew the outcome of X, Y, and Z, that whole playbook's been upended by President Trump now.
Completely. And I think people in the region know it. It takes a while for that region to really absorb what things like that mean. But I think they're absorbing it right now, and I think they're looking at that response last night. And I think all of them hope that that's the end of what Iran's going to do. And maybe they'll start acting themselves over there, you know, Arab to Arab, to figure out how to get something straight. Because, as I said earlier, America can't fix this. The Arabs have got to fix this. And this goes back to the end of World War One. I don't want to get into all the historical stuff, but, you know, the Europeans tried to force on the Arab nations, or nations, they didn't even have nations, the Arab people over there, a sort of false set of nations that hadn't worked. And the Arabs have got to settle this. The Europeans and Americans can't settle it for them. But we're not going to let, America's not going to let any group over there use any of that property, that land over there, as a safe haven for people to take strikes at the West. We're just not going to let them do that.
And so that, I've heard you say that a couple different times. So in your eyes, our interest there is to prevent there being any safe haven for terrorists and terrorist development. We're out of the business, in your opinion, of trying to build a democratic Iraq or anywhere else in the region.
Yeah. It's time for us to just recognize reality. That didn't work. We spent far too much money on it. It was a waste. If they want democracy and a true functioning government, they need to go do it for themselves. But we do have an interest in making sure that we have counterterrorism actions over there, so that at the very least we can suppress these terrorist groups like ISIS and Al-Qaeda and these groups sponsored by Iran like Hezbollah from popping up and doing damage to us or to our interests.
Right. I want to talk about what's going on in the House right now and then look over down the long haul over to the Senate. And where are y'all now on the House? I mean, the articles of impeachment, well, what's the delivery schedule on that? Do you hear anything from the Democrats?
Well, they had a meeting late yesterday, the Democrats did, and Pelosi doubled down on holding the articles of impeachment. So, and this can change any moment, Sean, you know, the way they work over there. They could have some sort of shimmer over in their group, and all of a sudden everything shifts. But as of right now, we don't have any firm timeline for them to bring up this privilege resolution in the House that would name the managers and send the articles over to the Senate. Meantime, McConnell has said, hey, I've got the votes to adopt the rules to do the Senate trial our way, so I don't care what Pelosi says. We're going to do it the way we said we're going to do it, which is just mimicking what they did in the Clinton trial. So she's not accomplishing anything. I mean, she's accomplished nothing, except that after telling us for weeks that we had to impeach the president before Christmas, now we're 3 weeks post-impeachment, and she won't even send articles to the Senate, which just belies that whole argument she had. Oh, we got to get this done before Christmas. No, we didn't.
One of the things, help me understand this too, because in some of the discussion I've heard where, you know, what about witnesses in the Senate and all that, we can get into it. Then I heard somebody say the other day that the House could call witnesses again or something that effect. I thought it was finished in the House, or is it still ongoing? What are the rules around that?
Well, there's nothing in our rules to say that you can't impeach somebody twice. It's never happened before.
Huh.
As crazy as it can be. But they could bring up new articles of impeachment. And Adam Schiff was directly asked about that by, you know, some of these news people over the holidays, and he would not rule out the possibility of new articles of impeachment. Now, I can just imagine what those Democratic moderates are thinking about that. I mean, they've caught enough grief about the two articles they've already had to vote on. You bring this up again, and it's just going to be more problems for them. So I can imagine that there are elements of their conference that are saying, no, 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 we don't want to do that. But they've also got majority of their conference that would impeach Donald Trump because he, you know, woke up this morning and sneezed.
That's probably accurate. All right. I want to talk about, I know it's not your gig, although you're looking for it to be your gig, but what's going on in the Senate? A lot being made about the witnesses, and there's not a real trial without witnesses. What's your take on what Mitch McConnell is saying and what Schumer is saying back at him?
Well, back 20 years ago when this was going on with Bill Clinton, they reached, like, 100 people in the Senate voted for these rules that said we're going to go forward with letting the managers present their case, the president present his counter case, and then we'll decide if we need to talk to any witnesses. That's exactly what they did for Clinton, and that's exactly what McConnell has proposed to do with regard to President Trump's impeachment. And Schumer, who actually voted for it 20 years ago, is now saying, no, 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 we don't want to do it that way. Well, phooey, you know. McConnell said, look, if you want to reach this agreement with me, we're going to go forward with action. So, made a compli with regard to what the process is going to be. Now, the one thing that's not a compli is whether after the managers present their case and after the president's lawyers respond, whether there will be any witnesses at all. My guess is that there won't be.
Now, I mean, because there was a big discussion this week that John Bolton may testify, but I don't have a feeling that's not going to happen.
I don't think it's going to happen. I mean, see, here's my take on this. What have we learned from all these witnesses about the phone conversation between President Trump and President Zelensky that we didn't know the day that the transcript was released? Tell me one thing that we've learned, you know, substantive thing that we've learned that's new. We've learned lots of people's opinions, people's presumptions, lots of hearsay, but what substantively new have we learned? From my point of view, we haven't learned anything new. And what is Bolton going to tell us that we don't already know? If you look at the transcript, you either think that that's a criminal thing for the president to do, or you don't. Hearing more witnesses is not going to change that.
And so getting this started and moved on, looks like you believe that timeline will be, what do you think? Are we looking at something that we're talking about this in the late spring, or is this done before the blossoms start, the leaves start coming out on the cherry trees in Washington?
I just can't imagine that we're going to bring the president over for the State of the Union address the first week or so of February, and this impeachment thing still going to be hanging over all of it.
Really?
I can't believe they're going to let it go that long. But if it gets much longer than this week, then that is exactly what's going to happen. And that is going to be awful for the country. you know, I know this is bad for President Trump, but it's bad for the country. And I'll say this about President Trump. I think this is actually helping him politically, as painful as it is for him to go through this. But the real loser here is America. We need to get off of this crazy stuff.
There's got to be something here, too, that when the votes go down, as you're running in the Republican primary for Senate, there's going to be a lot of eyes on what the person occupying that office right now, Doug Jones, votes. I mean, that I think there's a lot of people watching that. He's still not committed one way or another.
No, he's saying that, you know, he's a juror and he can't, he's got to keep an open mind. Look, the Senate is not a jury, okay? They don't walk into that room in the Senate chambers to make their decision, having known nothing outside of the Senate chambers about this. That's not what the founders intended. He's not a juror. He's seen the evidence. He's got to have an opinion about the evidence. And, you know, if he thinks it's sufficient to remove the president, he should say so. If he thinks it's not sufficient, he should say that too, but he won't.
That's for sure. We'll watch it. Congressman Byrne, thank you for your time. Thanks for the update, and we'll be checking back with you soon.
Good. Look forward to talking to you.
As always, good talking to you as well. AL1's Congressman Bradley Byrne checking in. So there's a little bit on the perspective from Washington on what's happened half a world away in Iraq with the Iranians launching those missiles. We'll talk to you about this when we get back. Do you feel like there's an escalation? Do you think we've reached a new stalemate? Have the Iranians saved face enough that they won't do anything else? And what would your response be if you're President Trump? Because so far, he has been very measured in his responses. Think about that. Go back through the drone shoot down and the attack on the Saudi oil fields. That's measured. And you say, well, you've now struck this Iranian general. But that was somebody that was a target of opportunity that we'd been wanting to get for a long time. Mm-hmm. So what do you think?
And we'll get President Trump's official remarks this morning at 10 a.m. That's when the White House says that the president will address the nation.
All right. And also our 1-800-GOT-JUNK online opinion poll question. Do you think the latest escalation between the United States and Iran will lead to a larger conflict? Vote online. Front page of FMTalk1065.com. Tallying up those votes. We'll talk about those when we get back.
Thirty-seven on FM Talk 106.5. This is Mobile Mornings. Time to head over to McConnell Automotive and talk to Louie Arata. Hey, Louie.
Good morning.
Morning. So tell us, what's going on the lot at McConnell?
Well, like I was talking about yesterday, the incentives on new cars. You know, they still got big money on trucks, got a great supply, a great selection of them, all different colors. Our used car inventory's standing tall. Got plenty of GM certified cars, which gives you an extra 12-12 on the warranty and pumps the powertrain up to 100,000 miles. And got some good interest rates on those, too. So just come by and check us out or give us a call at 476-4141 or check us out at McConnellAutomotive.com.
All right. We appreciate it, Louie.
Thank you.
That's Louie Arata. Check them out, McConnellAutomotive.com, or go see them in person at McConnell Automotive on Dolphin Street, just east of I-65.
All right. By the way, programming note for the Bid Day show today, live from Ed's Seafood Shed on the Causeway. Great place to do the midday show. I'll do the midday show from noon to 1, and then the Scuttlebutt Network, because of Auburn basketball tonight, adjusted schedule, they'll be on at 1 o'clock. Live from Ed's. So come out and see us. Join us, and we can just help me pick on Tom Claxton.
Yeah.
It'll be fun.
Be careful, though. He picks back.
Yes, he does pick back. But
I'll be there, too. I'm going to be looking at the turtle aquarium the whole time.
Yes, okay. Well, you know what? After 1 o'clock, I'll be doing the same with you. We'll be eating some lunch. So, yeah, y'all get a chance to come by and see us. We'll bring some FM Talk 106.5 goodies with us, the new run of huggers and some of those floating keychains for your boat, or if you're just clumsy with your regular keys around the water, we've got those as well. So come by and see us today. That's noon to 2, but noon to 1, midday mobile, 1 to 2, Scuttlebutt.
Yeah, and if you want to check out the Auburn game later tonight, that's at 8 o'clock. They are hosting Vanderbilt and trying to keep that undefeated season alive.
All right. And by the way, too, we'll tell you, we're loading the podcast of our interview that just finished with Congressman Byrne, and that'll be available if you want to share it or go back and listen to it. Not only will the hour be loaded later today, that specific interview is going to come up in just a little bit. Let's go to Hurley, right across the state line, Hurley, Mississippi. Talk to our buddy Buck. Hey, Buck, how's your control burn looking? You got 10 days, 2 weeks since you did that?
And my property looks amazing. I tell you, I was absolutely giddy over my drip torch for Christmas.
See, he and I speak the same language, so yeah, I'll need some pictures of that. All right, let's talk some politics and international affairs. What are you thinking this morning?
Well, if I could I pose a question to you? I'm sure that some of your other listeners feel the same way that I do.
Okay.
Now, I'm not anti Congressman Byrne, but I would like you to ask a question of him when you speak to him to explain a process to me. Do you remember when Congressman Byrne then said to elect or candidate Trump that he was unfit for office? You remember that comment?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so every time I hear the commercial where he's 97% backing Trump and he's completely all of the Trumpiest of Trumpers, every time I throw up in my mouth a little bit when I hear that commercial.
Oh,
I would love to hear him explain to us how he went from unfit for office to being the man.
No, I think that's good. You know, I can't give too many details, but there's a good chance that next month I will be involved in talking to the Republican Senate candidates. And I'm forming my questions right now. And that's one of the things that I might phrase that at first specifically to Congressman Byrne, but to all of them, because I got to tell you,
sure,
one of my missions is I want to get past how Trumpy each one is, just saying
sure
it, and show me how you benefit the state of Alabama and the American people. I don't know. You know, can you have a change of heart and change your mind? I'm not sure, because I would do a better job of saying, I look back at these decisions President Trump's made, and I like them. I line up with them because those things are decisions I make. I can't tell you what is going to be in the future because I have to see that situation. I think that's probably a more honest way to take things. Back then, I thought this. I was wrong. But since then, his decisions have been great, and look at this, that, and the other, and I agree with this, this, and this. I might disagree with that. And going forward, I think I'm going to agree with most of his ideas. I'd like to hear that from people who want to be our senator. Versus, yeah, they're going to be in lockstep or maybe like in your case saying, hey, what happened back when you thought he was unfit for audit? It's a fair question. A fair question, Buck, and I'll try to get it in.
Sure. I mean, because you and I can't answer that. He needs to answer that. And because it's not unfair. I've changed my mind plenty of times, as we all have. None of us are perfect, but I would just like to hear it from him how we got from there to where we are currently.
Fair question. Fair question. I'll try to get it answered.
So the whole Middle East thing, if we may, targeting the Sunni base and the Kurdish base wasn't a mistake.
Yeah, you saw that too, huh? Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. They can go back to Iran now to their people and say, yeah, we retaliated. Obviously, they're not going to attack a Shia base.
Right.
It wouldn't make sense when they're basically Shia. So it works in their narrative, in their country. We stood up to America, the bully, and we retaliated. Of course, they didn't want to kill Americans, because if you kill Americans, then you solidify America and the Americans around what it is that we're already doing.
Yep. And you get the retribution. If there would have been American casualties from those strikes, we most likely would have already seen the response. We had B-52s in the air. We had I'm sure we had locked in on site. But
sure.
Yeah, that's one thing I saw on Twitter last night that frustrated me a little bit. People were like, oh, look at the Iranians don't even know how to fire their missiles. That's why they missed. No, y'all, don't be naive. They actually do know how to fire their missiles, but they knew better than to inflict casualties. But you're right. The Erbil, base Erbil, is Kurd country, right? And al-Assad is a Sunni country.
That's right. If you go back and you look at Baghdad, say in 2006, 7, and 8, there was Sadr City on the eastern side of Baghdad. Well, when the Iraqi government or the American government couldn't provide the basic essentials, water and medical and electrical, Iran was there.
Mm-hmm.
If I would have been a citizen of Baghdad and looking out to protect my family, I can't tell you that I would have leaned on my government, the Iraqi government or the American government, because my priority is my family.
Yep.
Iran was very smart about the way that they handled that. They were taking care of the Shia in the area. And now those folks are, to this day, they're still loyal to Shia in Iran.
Well, let me ask you this. Is there a chance that Iran may be trying to lull us into a bit of a false sense of security? That they struck and it looks like that they didn't want to kill any Americans, but maybe they have something bigger planned on the horizon?
That's a good question. I don't think that they really want to get in a war with us. They can't. They know that they can't beat us.
I agree with Buck. I mean, that's I think what was done with those missile launches. And Buck, thank you for the call. We appreciate it. And check back soon. I need some pictures of that control burn. what they did there was not as much. It was all for inside the borders of Iran, right? That they have taken. Taking it to the great Satan, and they showed them, and this is to keep the power in Iran. Because if they, it's like I said on Twitter last night, that was not a tactical, if you were firing missiles tactically, I would have hit you, and then 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 hit you. That's how you start, I mean, you start an offensive by, you know, I mean.
Going all out.
You go all out, and you absolutely weaken where you're going to try to attack. No, that was a measure to show the Iranian people that they took their pound of flesh from the Americans. That's what that was about. We'll be right back. Thanks, Kane. 850 FM Talk 106.5 Mobile Mornings on this Wednesday. And yeah, Midday Mobile live from Ed's Seafood Shed. We'll talk more about that coming up at noon today. I'd love for you to come out and visit. Dalton's going to be there as well.
Mm-hmm. Ed Day Mobile today.
Yes, it will be Ed Day Mobile as we hopefully we'll get to visit with Nick and Panini Pete and the whole gang. And y'all come by and get some FM Talk 106.5 goodies. Maybe get Tom Claxton's autograph.
Oh,
Cal
yeah.
Walters as well with the Scuttlebutt Network. They're on from 1 to 2. And seriously, I'll be leaning on them and talking to them. Both veterans, both Marines in a time of conflict like this.
Yeah, that'll be great to hear their response. I think I might get Claxton to email to signature on my arm, maybe get it tattooed.
That'd be nice.
That'd be pretty cool.
Yeah, you'd be probably the first person that got Tom's. maybe not. Hey, this segment of the show brought to you by The Maids, referred for a reason. Been talking about The Maids all the way through the holiday season, and what a real change it was in our lifestyle at the Sullivan House. So give the gift of clean and the gift of time, and that was really important during the holidays, and it is going forward. Think about all these things that you do with your day. What's precious to you? Your job, you know, your career, your family, and your friends. What is that hour of time, that 2 hours of time, that 3 hours of time you spend cleaning the house each week? What is that worth to you? And what does it mean to get that back? And at the same time, have a house that is absolutely spotless. And that's what they do with The Maids. I am a big fan, and my wife is a bigger fan. The Maids. Right now, you can get a free estimate by calling 344-6626. 344-6626. But if you Google The Maids in Mobile, Baldwin County, you'll get more information. The Maids, they're referred for a reason. I'm telling you right now. See what I've been talking about. Get them to come once. And just check out what I've been talking about. Get that free estimate now. 344-6626. Give the gift of clean, and give the gift of time. Right to the text line here, and many buttons to click here as we go through. Somebody asking about the ballistic missiles and what they used, and said if reports are correct, the missiles used by the Iranians were the Fatah 110 ballistic missile. They have much more powerful Fatah 313 missiles, but chose not to use it. The Iranians have an abundance of the cheaper 110 missiles.
Yeah, and I don't know the exact missiles that were used, and I don't know much about them, but I did see someone earlier text that President Trump tricked them into using about half of their missiles, which is completely
That's
wrong.
Not right.
The Pentagon actually says they have more than 2,000 ballistic missiles in Iran. So they've got lots of ammunition out there. We did not get them to use half of their missiles.
Right. And once again, just sit back and think about it for a second. At least in my opinion, until I find out more information, with the information I have right now, what I saw, and that's why I was saying it pretty early on yesterday evening on Twitter, that wasn't like a... If they were going for World War III, you don't do the launches that they did yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
They're doing that for the home audience in Iran. Because we've got to think about it. Here's what it means to us, but then you got to figure out why are they doing something. Well, they're doing it to be able to stay in power. That's what the mullahs want, the supreme leaders, and on down the rank. They want to stay in power.
And another thing, what about cyber warfare? I was reading a story earlier this morning about Texas, and the governor there, Greg Abbott, he said that they've seen a spike in suspected and attempted cyber attacks here recently. He says that they're getting hit from Iran, according to whatever information they're able to gather, at the rate of about 10,000 per minute, 10,000 attempted cyber attacks per minute. And when we're talking about tit for tat, if they critically wound some part of the United States with a cyber attack, what's the tat for that? Because we're in a new era here with cyber warfare. And
I can tell you they may be responding to what happened back with the Stuxnet virus.
There's that.
And I know I've circled back to that a couple times, but I thought that was a brilliant move. You had this would have been 2000 and
I looked it up. It was discovered around 2011. I think it happened at about either 2009 or 2010.
Okay. So what happened? So the Iranians at this point they're working on their centrifuges, y'all, which is the process here. They're saying they're working to create nuclear power, right? But at the same time, come on. They were working on the bomb, mm-hmm. because every nation with a dictator that would be contrary to the United States is working to, if they can, have a nuclear weapon, because that's what keeps you in power. That's why Kim Jong-un will stay in power, because he has the bomb. Mm-hmm. That's what Gaddafi was working for. We said, don't get the bomb, Gaddafi, and he didn't, and you know, you see what happened. But so they're working on having the bomb. And then, you know, what do? They're underground facilities where they're doing it, so you can't straight bomb them. You've got, and obviously the issues that would go along with bombing a nuclear facility and all that. So some agency of the United States in intelligence, or using some other group, introduced a virus into the computers that were working on their nuclear program.
Mm-hmm.
And the mother of all viruses, we hear mother of all bombs, everybody wants to drop a Moab. I was real interested in dropping that Moab.
Yeah.
And mother of all viruses that went in there, the Stuxnet virus, that really put or delayed Iran where they were in their nuclear program by quite a bit, that moved them back. Maybe not as much as blowing something up, but maybe. And did it without any bloodshed. I thought that was interesting. So the cyber war, listen, they've been doing it to us and we've been doing it to them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think every nation out there, even friendlies, you look at these stories between, like, I'm sure there's some kind of probing from Canada into systems in the United States, and we're doing the same to them.
Yeah, it's all over the world. But talk about a crazy 24 hours in Iran yesterday. First, you had the burial of Soleimani, and 50-odd people died in a stampede in that. Then you had the Iranian strikes last night on the two bases. And then you had the plane crash taken off from Tehran, Ukraine International Airline. They had a crash that went down, 179 people dead from that. And then a magnitude 5.9 earthquake. Actually, that was back, this was a 4.9. They've had several earthquakes in Iran over the last few years, but a 4.9 earthquake hits near one of their nuclear plants there in Iran. That's all in the course of 24 hours.
Is that some kind of coincidence, or maybe they have nuclear plants everywhere? And if the earthquake hits somewhere to run,
that's a good point.
You know, you've hit near it. I don't know. There's a lot of questions here, and of course, the I guess the ball is in our court. We'll see what comes of that. President Trump will be speaking at 10 o'clock.
10 a.m.
10 o'clock our time. We'll be speaking, and we'll be covering that and talking about it during the midday show as well today. It'll be interesting to hear. With President did not speak last night. I think if there would have been U.S. casualties, the president would have spoken from the White House last night. He didn't, mm-hmm. and it's going to do it today. It'll be interesting to hear what he lays out on that, and I'm sure there'll be pressers afterwards with Mike Pompeo and others to talk about the where it stands now and going forward. Do we expect some kind of big strike? I don't know. I mean, they shot down one of our unmanned drones. We didn't retaliate by bombing the countryside. They attacked Saudi oil fields. President Trump had a measured response. I think we'd have more of that coming, but it's to be seen. All right, Mike Gallagher Show on the way next. We'll see y'all at Ed's on the Causeway for Midday Mobile starting at noon. Come by and see us. We've got some goodies for you.